Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a nice huge shout-out to Mr. Big Benz for being an awesome patron. So if you want to be able to support the MTG in Quarantine podcast and help me make more awesome content, definitely consider joining my Patreon over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. There's a whole bunch of rewards over there, so definitely check it out. Again, that's patreon.com/mtginquarantine. Alright, so the topic of today's episode is actually going to be something a little different than normal, and we have a very special, I guess, returning guest in a way, but also a very new guest, in the fact that it's actually his first podcast episode ever, so this is really exciting. I would like to introduce my very good friend, Neil Royal, to the show. Welcome to the mad, mad world of podcasting, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, so again, people have probably seen your content over at the Neil Royal House of Pricey Cardboard, but again, if you want to just talk a little bit more about your content, I think this would be an awesome opportunity for you to plug that, especially since you make such really good videos, and I had a great opportunity to guest on your show a few weeks back.
Yeah, so we do a gameplay video for EDH on YouTube, mostly casual in the optimized range. We go sometimes into CDH, but mostly it's good high power / optimized casual most of the time. I try and go for like a little more edits than MTG Mudster, that is like more regular, the same animation all the time. So we do little intros for the commander. It's like an in-between between Mudster and Command Zone. Not quite the big super effects, but a little more than maybe your average gameplay channel.
Oh yeah, it's the production value on your videos is so good. I mean, I was blown away the first time I saw one of your videos. And the opportunity to be able to play on there and see my deck, you know, my commander Sithis Harvest Hand, for those who haven't seen the episode from a couple weeks ago, it was really cool just seeing my commander up there, the cards kind of just floating in there, and the intro, just that was so good. Thank you. And where can people find the Neil Royal House of Pricey Cardboard?
Yeah, it's mostly it's on YouTube at the EDH Neil Royal, and we're on Twitter, Instagram as well, under the same name, so you can follow there. But if you're subscribed on YouTube, you're getting pretty much all the content there is.
Oh yeah, and there's so much back there. There's actually episodes I need to go back and watch. So you know, it's one of those things where you know, I at some point I have to actually, you know, create a watch list or something so I can actually go back and remind myself to watch everything, because there's so much content out there, but you create such great videos. It's astounding how much you're able to just pump out that quickly.
If you go back far enough, you're actually gonna go see, like, instead of seeing it getting better every week, you're gonna see it getting worse every episode since you're going back.
I'd be lying if I said that, you know, at the very beginning of my podcast series that, you know, I was doing quite well. I wasn't, so I feel your pain on that.
I think it's normal. With anything you create, you get better with time, so you just, that's just how it goes. Yep.
All right, so we're going to get into the meat of today's topic, and we've obviously heard online that a lot of EDH players really don't like stacks. So obviously stacks, we're looking at Smokestack, Winter Orb, Mesmeric Orb, things that basically try to stop your opponents from playing Magic. And caught in a lot of this discourse is actually what is known as the taxing effect, or hate bearers. And that's what we're going to be talking about today here, because what we would like to discuss today are quite a few sources of hate bearers, so a way to be able to slow your opponents while you gain some incremental advantage, but not completely locking your opponents out of the game, which is definitely different between the hate bearers, the taxing type effects that we'll see in, like, Legacy, for instance, Mono White, and, you know, something like a CDH stacks list, where you're really just trying to lock your opponents out of the game while you're trying to further your strategy. And again, this is definitely something that you're really interested in. You've played a lot of these cards. So again, I wanted to make sure that I really got to talk to you about, you know, what it is about hate bearers that you really enjoy playing, and how can we try to reduce the stigma around hate bearers for players who are not really quite sure exactly how far to go into the taxing effect without really trying to go all full stacks? And again, I'm going to use a disclaimer here that we're not going to be saying that you playing these cards or playing stacks is a bad thing. Again, make sure to check with your playgroup first. This is what Rule Zero is for. But definitely use this information as an informative tool to inform your own decisions, and hopefully your playgroups will be okay with these taxing effects, even if they aren't okay with full-on stacks. So with that out of the way, let's get talking to this outline you kind of put in. Before the show, we talked about quite a few of these cards, actually, and I just kind of wanted to hear what some of your first thoughts were on hate bearers and kind of just where do hate bearers really fall in the play experience pile?
Yeah, I think with most powerful cards, it's mostly an intent. The intent for what you use them is what's important. So if you play like really super casual EDH where everyone plays big spells every turn and it doesn't really matter, no hard win con, maybe you don't need those kinds of hate bear. But as you go in the power level, the stronger your decks are, sometimes for your strategy to work, you need to slow down your opponents. And that's where you need to fall like right in the right zone where you prevent them from winning too fast, but you don't, like you said, you're not trying to lock the table, you're just trying to slow everything down. So if the deck you're facing is super ramping turn after turn and you don't have the attack power to take it out by combat, well, maybe if you play something that prevents the ramp from happening so fast, well, it's gonna help you and bring a fairer experience on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, talking about my episode on your channel a couple of weeks ago, I did use a hate bear effect in the enchantment authority of the consoles, which mm-hmm. does require that every opponent's... Is it just creatures or is it artifacts too? I can't remember.
It's only creatures.
Yeah, okay.
But it's one CMC, so it's very
yeah.
cheap.
Yeah, so it forces all of your opponent's creatures to enter the battlefield tapped. Which, again, may not necessarily sound like an overly taxing effect, except if you're running, let's say, a creature-heavy or a token-heavy deck, red decks especially, where you have haste. So something like Krenko Goblin mm-hmm. Mob Boss, or Krenko Mob Boss with goblin tokens, excuse me. You know, that deck's looking to pump out a whole bunch of tokens. Well, all of a sudden, Authority of the Consoles, not only are you gaining life off of all those goblin tokens, but you're forcing them to be tapped down. And this can be used offensively and defensively. So I believe I actually got quite a bit of value off that card in that game, if memory serves correctly, because I was able to force all of you, my opponents, to have to basically play to my rules, while also not stopping you from playing creatures or even forcing you to have to pay more. I just got an incremental advantage by forcing your creatures to be tapped down, whereas mine would be untapped when they entered the battlefield.
Because it plays, you play with the blockers, you play with the, like you said, especially in decks that try to have haste all the time. I have a Gyred Conclave Exile deck, mm-hmm. and haste is a big factor in how strong the deck will come out. So a card like that doesn't read creatures can't have haste, but essentially that's what it does, because you can't attack, you're tapped down, so you turn off a big powerhouse of the deck.
Yeah, so let's go start in on your list here, from the top of here, and we have some interesting hate bears that I know people kind of hate listening to, pun intended, obviously, starting with cards like Grand Arbiter Augustine IV, excuse me. Sorry, Zuby, I didn't mean to butcher your favorite commander there, but Grand Arbiter Augustine IV, the 2 CMC Thalia, although honestly both Thalias fit under this one too, as well as Trinisphere and things like that. I guess my first question here is what is the right time to start using hate bears in the power level conversation? Again, I don't necessarily subscribe to the power level conversation, you know, at the 1 to 10 as it's commonly defined, but I guess as we're talking about this, we're more likely to see hate bears when we're trying to improve or increase the level of optimization in our decks. And I just really wanted to hear your thoughts on when you would use these cards and when you might potentially not use these cards or use something a little bit heavier, something more towards the stacks level. kind of where along the spectrum of casual to optimized do you feel that some of these hate bearers fall?
Yeah, well, like I said at the beginning, I think for almost every hate bearer, you want to be above a certain power level. You don't want to be too battle cruiser, because then these decks already have difficulties to win the game, close the match. So you don't want to put too much things in the way. You just want to let everybody play, and one turn somebody will manage to grab the win. But once you get into more aggressive decks that have clear win cons, I think you can start and use these hate bears. These ones we first name, they're playing a bit with the cost of decks, so these are very effective when somebody is trying to go super efficient, like aggro human, like the well, I guess the Talia could be in the aggro human, but a deck that tries to go fast ramp, maybe early turn with a one drop wild growth, something like that, you come and mess with all of these synergies. And Augustin, as much as he's seen as a stacks card, because he puts one on everything, but what most people forget is that he ramps the players that plays it, because your white and blue spell each costs one less. So if the spell is both white and blue, it costs two less. So I was running that in my Azor, and Azor was becoming a four draw. So that's extremely relevant, because you slow down your opponents and you're going faster. So I'm not sure how bad, like, sure, you can put stacks cards in an Augustin deck, but by itself, I don't see how this card can be stack C, because it's just one more. Like, it's gonna get stack C if you put tons of them, but by itself, you will never lock a table with just Augustin.
Yeah, and this is something I've actually come across a few other times. So a good friend, obviously my good friend of the show, J-Ro, the Unsummoned Skull, he actually has a very similar Augustin build where he is using it as a Spellslinger deck because of the free CMC cost reduction that you're getting off your commander there, and not really necessary. I mean, the hate bear aspect of the Arbiter is nice. It's kind of cherry on the top in that case, but he doesn't lean all that much into that taxing effect in that deck because he believes it's more interesting to be able to play. And Jero, if you're listening in this and I'm completely wrong, just let me know. I know I'm going to hear about this, but same thing for, I run the new Thalia, so the one out of the Eldritch Moon and Shadows of Innistrad block in my human tribal deck. And one, because she does fit along the human creature type, so obviously that goes along with all the synergies I have in that deck. But the fact that I can slow my opponent's non-basic lands and creatures is really nice sometimes, especially when in my playgroup I do see a few things like Cabal Coffers. I do see some very big lands that can do some scary things. It's nice to be able to have force those to be tapped down until my next turn, so I have an opportunity to try to deal with them in some other way. So I'm slowing my opponents down a little bit, but I'm not necessarily locking them out of the game. And
oh yeah, for sure. The Heretic Qatar is one of my favorite aid bear. You can, if you ask Kelly, she's gonna tell you how much she hates this card, because it's just so good.
Oh man. So another thing that we talked about before the show here was the long time question, and this kind of goes into my introduction to the show, is how we add obstacles for our opponents versus stopping the game from progressing. And obviously, since Hull Breacher just got banned, and it was a very common example of how a player could effectively lock other players out of the game in one fell swoop, where do you feel like the line really is between Hate Bear and something that just completely stops the game dead?
I think it depends mostly on how this effect will either completely not affect you, but not just what it does to your own deck, but like, When you read the card, you know how bad it stops your opponent. So like I was talking about Augustin, that I don't feel you can never lock a table just with Augustin. Well, when you put a Rule of Law in your deck, you know that this effect that you can play only one spell each turn is going to impact multiple decks. It's going to make a big difference, because mostly in Commander, we're trying to ramp and dump a lot of spells one after the other. So you know the effect it's going to have. So I think that's where you can see the line between, like, I'm just slowing down my table or I'm trying to stop somebody from doing the thing.
Yeah, and again, this is something that we see a little less of in casual. Obviously, in CDH, you see this all the time. Hate bears are extremely common there because you are trying to force your opponents to not be able to do the thing that they want to do, right? And so there, I guess there's less of a stigma in that community using hate bears, and it's very commonplace, versus in casual where, again, depending on the game where you're playing in or the meta you're playing in, maybe it's not necessarily the most relevant or even the most popular pick to utilize a hate bear. I mean, I know in my own playgroup, we don't run a lot of the hate bears because it technically kind of slows the game down, forces us into a bit of a grind, and we kind of like more open-faced, you know, big beat stick, attacky games. And again, that's just what we really enjoy. We'll play hate bears occasionally, but we won't be running some of the heavier ones. We don't see an Augustine here. I will play Thalia occasionally, but again, it's not. I'm not exactly tutoring her out or anything. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, if I draw it, great, I'm able to stop my opponents, but I'm not looking for this piece. It's not a huge part of my game plan. It's kind of like I'm gaining a little bit of value when this creature is on the field. But again, this is just my playgroup's look at things. And again, in my more powerful decks, like I said, with my Sithis deck, I will run Authority of the Consoles because I know that gives me some advantage in multiple ways, not only the keeping my opponent's creatures tapped, but also gaining some life. And those are two things that I really want to do in that deck. And it really works with my deck synergy, so that's something that I really want to find in certain games to make sure that I'm able to get that out there to try to get a leg up on my opponents, especially when I'm otherwise forcing my back foot to try to be able to keep myself alive. Again, definitely watch that game if you haven't watched it, because the card did not save me. But I'd like to think you know, it did some things. It definitely kept me in that game and kind of forced everyone else's hand. So it demonstrates the value of hate bears. Anyway.
And, often they're very cost aggressive, so that they're low costed, like your Authority of the Consoles at one single mana. If you check the value you gain from a single white mana, it's insane. It's like...
Oh yeah, it totally is. I mean, that card is bonkers good, and that's why it's like $5-$6. To be able to get a copy of it in American dollars, because it is a very well-costed effect. And now, if that card was, let's say, 2 and a white, it'd probably be 25 cents, because people would say, well, it's not playable. And again, I'm not going to go into that conversation of what's playable versus what's not, but that kind of effect is always good. And then when you have one mana and life gain stapled onto it, it is an absolute bomb in that deck. And it also gives me a little bit of extra value because my opponents are being slowed down, and that is never a bad thing for me as the player. So we also have another list here of other hate bears. Do you want to kind of... So you broke down different kinds of hate bears in this little outline we talked about before the show. Do you want to just kind of go through piece by piece kind of what you were thinking behind this, and then we can just discuss as we go?
Mm-hmm. So the next category I wrote after playing with the cost was playing with tutors. I won't hide that I have like a grudge against land decks. That's not my thing. But tutor, I feel like impact the game a lot, obviously, because you always get what you need from your deck. And in addition, a lands deck, it allows them to grab lands after lands after lands from their library without actually drawing. So when in most of my decks, I try and run anti-tutor effect. But I see a distinction between like some of them in terms of power levels. So Ashiok Dreamrender is like one of my favorite because cost 3, it's well placed. There's a Grave 8 on it, and in my meta, we run a lot of graveyard decks, so the Grave 8 is relevant. But you can also swing in it. So if your whole game depends on tutoring your deck, well, there's a way out compared to a creature. It's harder. You need to have an actual removal card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also listed Aven Mind Sensor and the ever-popular Opposition Agent in this list as well. And Aven Mind Sensor, for those who aren't familiar, basically forces you as the player who is tutoring to only look at the top 4 cards of your library instead of your whole deck. So that can definitely force a lot of failed finds. I've seen a lot of, like, CEDH, you flash in Aven Mind Sensor, fail to find you after you crack a fetch land, you paid a life, you got rid of a land, you get nothing in response, and then opposition agent is obviously very powerful in the fact that you can go tutor for a card instead of someone else. And that, yeah, that definitely led to a lot of controversy when that card first came out. I haven't heard as much about it lately, obviously because Hull Breacher just went completely supernova right after Commander Legends came out. But yeah, Opposition Agent is definitely one of those cards where if you're playing black and your opponents are tutoring a lot of cards, you can basically force their hand, tutor for something else, and then deal with it. So yeah, being able to force your opponents to not be able to tutor for cards is huge. Even, again, if you're trying to take my lands deck out and I just hit a Rampant Growth and you can stop me, well, all of a sudden, if I'm not able to play another Forest or anything, that really hurts my game plan. So yeah, just even something like that can really turn the tide. It doesn't even have to be to try to stop someone from finding that combo piece they need to win the game. Anything to stop your game plan can definitely mess with, and that's what these tutor effects are for, is that Aven Mind Sensor isn't always going to stop, you know, the combo win from the tutor. It's not going to stop an Ad Nauseam or anything like that. But if someone's trying a Demonic Tutor for something, well, Aven Mind Sensor can be flashed in, is aggressively costed, has flying, which is always nice, and just, you know, forces your opponents to really have to consider not tutoring sometimes, especially if they can't kill it. It's just that good.
Yeah, I think like in the beginning when we were talking about intent with your eight bears and how you want to impact the game, I see a big difference between Aven Mind Sensor, where they get something potentially from their top four, compared to Opposition Agent, where now I'm tutoring your deck and removing, and then I can even play it. As much as I like messing with the tutors of my friends, my opponents, I think Opposition Agent is a little too much. It's good. You have bigger chance to run into field bats compared to Aven Mind Sensor. Like, sure, I messed up your fetch land. You got a basic instead of a shock land, but most of the time you're going to get something still, so you're not as far behind.
Yeah, definitely. And this is definitely one of the reasons why I personally don't run a lot of tutor effects. So I actually don't see these cards anywhere near as often as someone like you do, who runs, in theory, more optimized decks, or who just, your playgroup runs a lot more tutors. So I never see these cards in my personal meta because we don't really tutor for a lot of cards, honestly. It's my Demonic Tutor basically sits unused. So it's just one of those things where it's very meta dependent. An Opposition Agent against players who aren't tutoring is just a really low cost creature, or it could be an absolute blowout like Hull Breacher often was, when your opponent is trying to find a specific card, even a response like a board wipe or something, to be able to clean the board and try to start over. You can Opposition Agent in there, you can not only stop them from getting that board wipe, but then you can take something nice from their deck. Yeah, that I can definitely see that being a huge problem if you haven't talked with your playgroup ahead of time about, you know, the fact you're running Opposition Agent, because that, yeah, that can definitely lead to, like you said, some feel bads. There is you're tutoring for my deck and then you're playing my stuff. That's some pretty gross value right there, and that's why Opposition Agent definitely received a lot of heat when it came out. So I mean, I hate bear getting a lot of hate, haha. You know, I'll be here all week. So next up was your pingers category.
Yeah, it's like it's not as stacksy, if you will. It's not the first kind of hate bears we think of when we say hate bear, because you can still play the game as if they weren't on the table. But cards like Kemball, the Orzhov one, and Harsh Mentor, which is mono red, that when you do something, you lose life. Like they do almost the opposite. Instead of slowing the game down, they make it go faster because the opponent is just like taking damage.
Sure.
And Kemball feel like, you read the card, doesn't seem that strong. It's every time an opponent plays non-creature
spell. Yes, I think.
Yeah, so. Non-creature. They lose two, you gain two. But a little like Authority of the Consult, by the end of the game, the value you gain from this three drop, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is, especially if you have Kamball as your commander. Another card that I wanted to bring up was Liesa's Shroud of Dusk. She also has an ability where if anyone, and again, that's a symmetrical effect, so it's a little different. And and because whenever you cast just any spell, you lose 2 life when she's on the battlefield. And also, I wanted to bring up Rurik Thar, the Unbowed, who famously does 6 damage every time any player plays a non-creature spell. I guess I would kind of throw that under here, though, in a way, if you're running like a Rurik Thar deck with Rurik Thar as the commander, you're probably not running a whole lot of non-creature spells. So, yes, it is symmetrical as an effect, but you're probably not getting burned by it anywhere near as much as your opponents are. And then obviously Kamball and Harsh Mentor ping your opponents specifically for just playing the game.
Yeah, for sure. But with most, maybe, I don't know if it's more than half, but there's multiple sources of like soft stacks or hate bears that are symmetrical. And like your game plan when you're building your deck is to make it asymmetrical by not using this. Like if you're playing a Torpor Horb to mess with the ETBs, well, maybe you don't play as many ETBs because you know at some point you're going to shut them off.
Mm-hmm. Or like how I keep looking at my CEDH deck where, you know, I really wonder, why am I playing the Lightning Greaves sometimes because I want to untap my commander? Oh, well, that's a little weird. So, you know, it just things like that where synergy is you always have to be cognizant of where your cards can be and non-bows that can happen. Like in my CEDH deck, I need to make sure that I don't have the Lightning Greaves attached to my commander when I'm trying to do the combo because that could be a serious problem because I can't target my commander all of a sudden. So again, just things where you have to be careful in your deck building, especially if you are running Hate Bears, because there is a possibility you could actually shut off your own strategy and then you're kind of dead in the water unless you remove one of your own pieces. And that, you know, that never feels good, honestly, to have to remove your own piece from the board because it's secretly messing with your strategy.
Well, one Hate Bear that comes to mind that can do that is Ushbringer. It negates ETBs and it negates Death Trigger. So unless your deck really doesn't do any of these, but it's the kind of card like you have to think about putting in your deck because this one can really shut down a whole table. Like one deck is Orzhov trying to play Aristocrat and now they're not getting Death Trigger. The other one is Yarok going ETB all the time and you're shutting both of them with your single Hate Bear. So
oh,
this
definitely.
One could be a bit much as well.
Yeah, speaking of Hushbringer, let's actually go to the ETBs category here. You also have the Hushwing Griff as well as Linvala in this list. And in this list, you're specifically looking, again, with Hushbringer, trying to shut off ETBs, trying to shut off potentially Death Triggers, depending on which card you're looking at. Because, again, if there's something Wii's Commander players really enjoy, it's Enter the Battlefield Triggers. This is the reason why Siege Rhino was so good back in the day in Standard. This is the reason why we still play Thragtusk. There's just a lot of creatures out there that have really gross ETB abilities or even LTB abilities, excuse me. And the ability to shut those off, especially against a deck that's looking to, you know, blink decks for ETBs or, you know, a graveyard aristocrats deck for LTBs, things like that. Being able to shut those off could really be crucial or critical to helping you win the game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's the kind of effect that almost every deck runs. It's very rare that you run an EDH deck without a single ETB. Like, I think it's Josh from the comment zone that said every time a Torpor Horb drops, he can't kill it because his answer to artifacts is Rexage. So it's the kind of thing you're like, oh, yeah, I didn't build it with that in mind. And I think out of all the categories I wrote down, these one are the only type of 8 bears I don't personally run because I think they push a bit too much on the stopping the game versus slowing the game. But it's a meta call. I guess you could need those kind of effect, but in my meta, it's not that it's not the ETBs that creates the game ending plays.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting you bring that up because I see Linvala all the time in my play group. So I've had to learn how to build my decks using triggered abilities and not activated abilities. Things like that is, I've realized, okay, activated abilities are nice, but if Linvala is on the field and I can't do anything about it, I don't want my entire deck to be shut off either. Mm-hmm. So I guess I have made an adjustment in my own meta to try to go towards more triggered abilities as a result, because those cannot be countered by Linvala's ability. As long as we're talking about the Keeper of Silence here, and not the newer versions, but yes. that's definitely one of those things where, again, it's all meta dependent, is that you may not see these kinds of cards in your meta, or you may see them all the time. And that's just one of the things that we as EDH players, when we have a pod, is we get familiar with the other players, with what decks they're trying to play, what they're trying to do, and then we just try to evolve our decks from there. So, I mean, I don't play a whole lot of activated abilities because I know Linvala can come down. So it's just nice to be able to make sure that I'm guaranteeing myself that value, because I know that roadblock could be there and could shut down other strategies. There, some of my decks have more activated abilities, some of them have zero. It really depends on what the deck's trying to do.
There are silver bullets for sure. You're trying to hit a specific problem in your game plan and just shut it off.
Oh yeah, I know my Nigella deck would really hate Linvala. just because it's like half of what I'm trying to do in that deck. But yeah, just being able to shut off the ETBs, even if the ETBs just like draw a card, well, all of a sudden you're stopping your opponent from being able to gain extra resource accumulation. There are a lot of little ETBs and LTBs that don't really look like they mean a lot, but can add up over time. So again, anything that says draw a card or even gain 4 life, all of a sudden in a blink deck that can become weaponized very well. It's not necessarily like limited where, hey, drawing a card off a three mana 2/1 or something, well, that's really good, right? In EDH we typically don't play as many of those kinds of cards, so that card's probably in there for a reason. Being able to shut those down can really hurt that player, depending on what they're trying to do. It's just one of the interesting things about our format and kind of where people decide to go with their decks and what they're building, depending on how much optimization they want to put in. So then the next thing you had here on the list were actually the free spells, and we're talking about like the 2 CMC Lavinia. Oh, sorry, mana value now. I keep forgetting that. Lavinia, 2, the Teferi, things like that. So what exactly were you looking at for this category, and how do you feel like this is a important part of the Hate Bear conversation?
I think these they really come out when you start to play like against Cascade a lot, those kinds of deck. It's a little like we talked earlier with Linvala and everything, it's meta dependent, but when you start to play against big like Cascade tribal, if you will, like the whole deck idea is to always Cascade, like a Maelstrom Wanderer.
Yep, Yidris, like, some of the other one. I can't remember the other one. There's one that came out in Commander Legends that wants to do the same thing. I'm really drawing a blank on this one, but yes, big Cascade effects.
Yeah, these decks just like they feel like they run off with the game. Like they have a slow start, they ramp, and then they just start. They play one spell, they get 4 spell out of it. These spells cascade, and it gets out of hand so quickly. So these are the kind of head bears that's like, I'm gonna drop that on the table and let you figure out how you deal with it. And in this time, I will have time to reach my game plan instead of you just popping off like turn 5.
Oh yeah, and another interesting one you brought up here was Dranith Magistrate. And if I recall correctly, that stops your opponents from being able to play creatures or play cards that were not cast. And
It's anything from outside their hand.
Yep.
So they can't cast anything from outside.
That even shuts off commanders, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's why I put it to the right of my little lines, because it's one of them that's like, you can't just play it for these kinds of cascade deck. If you put it in your deck, you have to know that you will shut down the commanders. So if you're trying to not create field bads, maybe this one is more of a dangerous pick.
Yeah, and I'm noticing a pattern here that there's a lot of new cards that have these kinds of abilities that are, more than hate bears in a way, like Dranith Magistrate, Hull Breacher, Opposition Agent, is that they're taking the hate bear concept and then they're really pushing it to the max. Mm-hmm. And I don't try to speculate on things negatively on my channel, but again, I can definitely see that there's a lot of potential for feel bads in these cards and potentially where we're going in the future with these sorts of hate bears. And I think that this is really, really reinforces the Rule Zero conversation more than ever, because there are so many of these cards out there that can really shut off entire strategies or just really leave people out completely out to dry in commander-based decks for Dranith Magistrate, for instance. And, it's definitely something you have to talk through with your playgroup firsthand, because these can definitely lead to some bad moments. And, again, we as commander players want to make sure that we have fun. So, We are talking about these cards, but again, I want to emphasize that this is what Rule Zero is about. We want to make sure that you are having fun, your opponents are having fun, and that's really the whole point of the format. And we just have to be cognizant of the effects that some of these cards may have on not only our decks, but also on our opponents. And we have to understand when people potentially would have reservations about these cards. And it's going to be an ever-going, I guess, conversation, especially if more of these cards keep getting printed.
Yeah, something I wrote in the beginning of my little list that I didn't say is like, not everybody comes to EDH with the same, they're not trying to get the same fun in a way. So like, I know that for myself, I see Magic as a problem that needs to be solved. And it's something that I've heard from a lot of other players as well, but it's not everybody who's like that. So for some people, having those kind of taxes, top effect, it just shut off their fun compared to somebody like me who likes to solve the problem. But it's just another factor in the whole table equation. So knowing your friends, your opponents, what they want to do, if everybody's into this problem solving situation, then it's eight bears, I think, are a perfect fit for those kind of tables.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And again, it really depends on what kind of experience you're looking at for that game. Is I know, and I will play through Hate Bears. You know, it's annoying, yes, at times, but you play through it and hopefully you find an answer to blow something up. That's why we in my playgroup run a lot of artifact and enchantment removal, is that we get board wiped a lot, but we also have a lot of problematic artifacts, a lot of problematic enchantments that do things. So, like this. So we want to make sure that we have ways to be able to clean those off the board. So we try to attack the strategy if possible. And again, it's going to depend from group to group. Is that I have some decks that would just get absolutely wilted by one of these cards. I have other decks that wouldn't even blink an eye. So it's just kind of one of those things where it ultimately comes down to what you're trying to get out of it, what your group is trying to get out of it, and really just kind of, you really have to consider where you're playing it. But again, We're kind of digressing here from the point. And we're going to move over to the graveyard. Hate Bears. You had a couple on here, like Anafenza and whatnot. Do you want to talk about this for a quick moment?
Yeah. Like I said, in my own play group, we play a lot of graveyard decks. So it's the kind of thing that I see very often. Because if you're not playing graveyard, well, suddenly you're trying to stop the other ones from playing in their own graveyards. And every time somebody tells me, well, we don't run graveyard hate in our group, and I'm like, how? Like, is nobody playing black? Is nobody... to me, it sounds crazy.
I have to tell you, unfortunately, my group doesn't play a lot of graveyard hate because we don't really have any dedicated... I mean, I guess we have, like, one partial dedicated graveyard deck that does some things by bringing creatures back from the graveyard, but it's not, like, the only thing it does.
Yeah,
so we don't even run Tormod's Crypt or things like that. We do run Bujuka Bog, but it typically doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess our playgroup got built from, like, Gisakerolf, Meren, and some other mono-black general. So,
yeah.
Like, the foundation of our playgroup is very graveyard-heavy. So we all started with, like, okay, at some point in the game, somebody needs to clear the graves.
Oh, man, that sounds like an absolutely gross thing that to have to deal with. It's like, you know, you have to deal with graveyards or else bad things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, since everybody was doing it, we never like went to the point where it's like the ley line, rest in peace, that just ETB, exile everything, and everything after that hits the grave gets exiled. That we never really played those because, like we said, it stops the game. It doesn't put an obstacle in the way. It's just, well, now you can't do the thing. If you take something like Anafenza that reads whenever a creature dies, well, suddenly it's different. Like, I can self-mill, I can still reanimate, but if something dies, it's gone forever. So it's more interesting in a way.
Yeah, and you're also not completely stopping your opponents from playing the game either. That's that's something that's, again, we're really trying to hit home here in this episode, is that we believe the Hate Bears don't have to be part of a strategy where you are looking to lock someone or all of your opponents out of the game. hate bears can be used more flexibly, can be used more casually. Again, there are times where you don't want to be using hate bears on someone running chair tribal, let's say.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, I find it okay to use Authority of the Consoles or use New Thalia, for instance, because I know that it's helping me move my game plan forward. But I personally don't really like running a lot of hate bears because I don't necessarily like, and again, this is just my preference in a lot of the games that I play, is I don't really like being hit by a lot of hate bears either. So I try not to run those kind of strategies that I don't necessarily like seeing. So that's just the way I look at things. But again, if you're going to be playing a more optimized table where, or even CDH, where you're really looking to try to go all out to win, then yes, as long as that expectation is there that you're going to be using Rest in Peace, then everyone else knows and is on notice that you will be using it and there's no holds barred at those tables because there's an expectation that Rule Zero conversation in theory has been had. So you are okay playing it there, whereas, you know, more casual games, you may not play some of these cards, or you may not play the most optimized version of these effects. Just like you mentioned, the Anafenza is a little different than Rest in Peace. It's more easily blown up, and it also offers you some choices regarding how you want the game to progress versus just a hard lock on all graveyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in CDH, like, they don't really need this kind of pre-game talk, because the whole point of CDH is that everything goes. You're just you're trying to win. So I don't think nobody's gonna be mad because you played a Dreaded Magistrate in CDH. Like, no, you were there for that. But
yeah.
But I think there's maybe a more of a stigma in casual where it's like, oh no, I'm not playing stacks. Well, it's not stacks. I put one obstacle in your way. I don't prevent your lands from untapping. I don't prevent you from playing any card. It's a little step in the road.
Yeah, I want you to, you know, the old Thalia, so the Guardian of Thraben, forces all non-creature spells to cost one more. Well, I'm not stopping you from playing the game, but
yeah,
maybe I'm forcing you to not have two mana up for that counterspell this turn. Mm-hmm. Do you want to have counterspell up or something like that, and in some instant speed interaction, or do you want to play the card you want to play on curve, let's say? Well, all of a sudden, now you may have to make that choice as a player, so the person who's playing that Thalia, all of a sudden you've gained advantage by forcing your opponent to not be able to do the two things that they want to do on that turn on a level playing field. And that's really where the hate bears come in. It's trying to find those little bits of incremental value where you can, depending on your deck, trying to figure out what doesn't hurt you as much as your opponents, and then figuring out, is this necessarily the right table to be playing this at? Yeah, and if you're never quite sure, again, this is Rule Zero. In CDH, we see these cards all the time because they are very powerful. We see Dranith Magistrate a lot. We will see a lot of those tutor with things to mess with tutor. We'll see cost reduction. You'll see Trinisphere. But also, that's why a lot of these hate bears are played in Legacy too. It's the reason why Mono White Death and Taxes is so good in that format, is because the hate bears have a very good track record.
Mm-hmm. And the amount of turn is very fewer. So if you can slow your opponents by two turns, well, maybe the game is over by then.
Yeah, so these are definitely a tried and true method for being able to win games as far back as in Magic's history as you can really go. And we are just in a very interesting spot as EDH players, where we have to consider, you know, what our play groups are interested in playing. And that's really where the hate bears versus stacks conversation has to start. Is you can go into stacks, you just want to talk to your play group about that ahead of time, just to make sure that they're okay with playing hard stacks, because again, you may have a different deck, different experience to be able to deal with that, and as soon as you're on that same page, that's what really makes our format hum. I did a whole episode on Rule Zero with Crate Commander a couple weeks ago, so if you want to check that out, I highly recommend it. It was a great episode. Anyway, coming back to, I guess, the end of our episode here, you did make a note at the very end of your outline about how the parallels with board wipes are, so how hate bears can be like board wipes. And what exactly do you mean that hate bears are like board wipes?
Well, what I meant by that is that it happens sometimes we play, like in our meta, we may play hate bears a lot, but we don't play as many board wipes. So if there's, let's say, two board wipes in a whole game, it's it will be in the average of our matches. But when we reach like 4 or 5 board wipes, everybody's like out of steam and the game drags on and it's boring for everyone. So I felt like in most situations, it's the kind of thing like, if you get the right board wipe at the right time, it can win you the game for sure. But maybe you don't want to be running like 10 board wipes in your deck and just every 2 turns you're clearing the table. So you're trying to get just like the right amount to help you play against your opponents and just find the balance in that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comparison there, because I know in my meta we play a lot of board wipes, and that's why our games definitely go very long, because we do focus on grindy combat focused decks that, you know, whoever we are kind of like the Obzon in a way. We try to outlast each other with our huge grindy games. But again, that's not the way a lot of groups like to play. So like in your group, for instance, is that I wouldn't be running anywhere near as many board wipes. I would potentially try to run a few more hate bears to make sure that my strategy will go off a little bit quicker, or if nothing else, prevent you from getting to your endpoint quicker to try to make sure that I can set myself up for victory. So I can make some card changes. And this is what's interesting about EDH, is we don't run sideboards. So we kind of have to figure out exactly what we want to do, you know, with ahead of time when we're building the deck. And that can be problematic sometimes. But again, that's really the fun of trying to build, is that we can edit these decks forevermore, and we will never always have an answer to everything. We just have to try to do the best we can. And if we want to make sure that our games end a little quicker, yeah, hate bears are definitely a way to slow your opponents while not really necessarily hurting yourself. Whereas adding a board wipe in, that, you know, that is symmetrical in most cases. It could really hurt you too. And again, maybe the game will go on an extra hour and a half because you did a board wipe at a time where otherwise someone was going to win the next turn or two. So sometimes you're right there. It's a very interesting comparison between board wipes and hate bears, is that you kind of want to find that right balance of these cards, again, depending on your experience. All right. Well, I think we've reached the end of our episode. I really want to thank you for being on the episode today. It's been great having you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was fun.
And where can people find the Neo Royal House of Pricey cardboard again?
On YouTube, you can write EDH Neo Royal in your search bar. It should pop up. It's like an N with a slide in it. And you'll find we post every Thursday a gameplay episode. I skipped this week because I a little overbooked myself. But usually it's every Thursday. We don't miss a lot. And I'm probably making a giveaway for the Esper Commander deck that just released, so see, you can look for that.
Yeah, and do you want to give a quick plug for the latest game on the channel in case any of my listeners are interested in seeing what you had on tap for last week?
Yeah, I think last week it was the game with not Ripley's, the other one.
I think it was with Fitzy and his Merit Lage deck.
Oh, yeah. I took an older one with that. So we have Anoan, Brago, Tayam, and Merit Lage. And this one is a little higher power. The Brago deck is like basically a combo deck. So if you like those like more powerful matches, it's a good one.
It was definitely a good one to watch. I watched it over lunch break last week. Just wow, this game did not go how I expected, but it was very enjoyable. And I cannot recommend your videos enough. So anyone who's listening to my episodes here, definitely check out these videos. They are high quality, they're great, the narration is good, there's always some fun little anecdotes going on behind the scenes there. Just so produced, so nice. I can't say enough about it. It you do such good work. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
All right, and if you want to find more of my content, you can find the MTG in Quarantine podcast on the usual podcast outlets, Spotify, Google, Apple, Player FM, CastBox. I mean, there's so many of these that I can never remember. So you can probably find me on a lot of the different podcast outlets. I'm probably there under MTG in Quarantine. You can also find me on Twitter talking about all sorts of weird card interactions, my 5-color Najeela deck, you know, 5-color colorless Najeela deck, excuse me, or just other really random things. You can find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. Also, if you would like to support the show monetarily, you can go on over to patreon.com/MTG in Quarantine to help support the show and help me make more awesome content. Again, I'd like to give a huge thank you to my patron, Mr. Big Bence, for helping support this show. There's a lot of interesting merchandising possibilities out there for different tiers, so definitely go on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine if you're interested in signing up. Well, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. You know, I say that an awful lot, so, you know, it's fun doing this. Thank you for listening. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.